Blog Talk Radio.
Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Welcome. This is Star, and today I'm really excited because I have a dynamic, spark-flying, enthusiastic, good friend of mine. Today I happen to have as my guest Carol Talbot. Carol, are you there?
I am.
Well, welcome, sweetie. And I have just been rocking and rolling, and I am so excited about your new book. Can you tell us about your new book?
Well, I'm as excited about my new book as you sound excited about it. It's just been released. It's called You, the Divine Genius. And if you think about it, if you want to get good at any subject, then you study that subject in depth. So the book is all about you and being a better version of yourself, literally going beyond the boundary of who you believe yourself to be.
Well, I just saw it rocking and rolling up the charts, and where did it end up the other day?
Well, we got it to international bestseller in quite a number of, well, that international means it's in many different countries. And it got to number one in metaphysics in that genre and quite high in a number of other areas as well. So, it was lovely to watch it going up the charts over a couple of days. It was really wonderful, very thrilling.
Well, I've read the book originally before it came out, and I was very impressed and pleased with it. How did you get started on this whole self-help, metaphysical, spiritual journey in your life?
Well, I guess that goes back to my mother, really. She had a huge influence and still does have a huge influence on my life, although I can't say I always appreciated it at that particular time in my life. Now I really value the fact that my parents gave me a really good upbringing. They really gave me the gift of choosing my beliefs, who I wanted to be, had a great childhood. And my mother was really always interested in alternative health. She dealt in bulk flower remedies, homeopathy, and we often had interesting people around the house as well. I know my dad always used to sort of raise an eyebrow as more weird people came in, as he liked to call them. And my mum also used to take me along to different things she was going to, so maybe psychic circles or meeting psychic artists. And to be honest with you, Star, when I was sort of in my teenage years, those things kind of scared me more than anything. I do remember being scared of the dark and always sleeping with a nightlight for ages and ages and ages. However, if I think back to those times, my mother was planting seeds. And I know she was also going to philosophy classes up in London at that time. So she's, we're branches off the same tree. So with the seed planted, it sort of led me to be an avid reader, always exploring, always curious. And I also remember studying astrology for a time, the tarot, and then looking at different courses. I always say I've studied all the ologies and all the therapies, although there's so many out there, I'm sure there's more. And my friends, even today, know me as a bit of a course junkie. So whereas other people go on holiday to sort of go sightseeing or laze about on a beach, for me, what really feeds my soul and satisfies me is to discover an opportunity for learning. You know, those times when you're reading a great book and light bulbs go off, or you're just sitting in a group of people and you feel inspired by the conversation. So I guess, I've always been curious, and I think that's a great state to have in life, to always be curious and always be hungry for more.
That's really, really important. Now, you originally came from England, correct?
Yes, I do, and you can probably tell
from my accent. And you live in the Middle East now. How did you end up living there?
Well, there's the long story and there's the short story. So I'll just share with you the short story, how this came to be about, because I've been here quite some time. I was actually in a long relationship for about 10 years, actually, with who I thought was the love of my life. And as it turns out, I wasn't the love of his life. So, you know, I know we've all had times in our life when, you know, things have gone the wrong way or not as expected, but I truly was devastated. I was heartbroken. And I spent a long time sort of wallowing in it, crying, wondering how I'd get through. And I'm sure this resonates with some of your listeners as well. We've all had those times of crisis. But then I remember one day just something snapped in me. And it was sink or swim time. It was that moment when you ask yourself, you know, do you want to stay here in this ditch or are you going to dig yourself out? And so I decided that really what I'd been gifted with was an opportunity to reinvent myself. So I decided that if that's what I was going to do, I would do it somewhere else in the world. And so I started about going to auditions. I started applying for jobs, sending my CV here, there, and everywhere. And, of course, in those days, there was no email or internet. And nothing happened. So I then started contacting friends who were overseas, friends of friends who were overseas, friends of friends of friends who were overseas. I was really determined to do this. And still, Star, nothing happened. Nothing happened. And I do remember saying to my mum, I don't know what else to do. And she looked at me and she said, Carol, if you're sure that you have done everything possible, then it's time to sit back and wait for the universe to respond. And literally, the universe did respond. Within just a few weeks, I had two opportunities. One was in Sharjah, and I've never heard of Sharjah. It's actually sort of about 25 minutes down the road from where I am now in Dubai, and then somewhere else overseas. But at that time, I was also going very regularly to meditation with a group called the Brahma Kumaris. And they were such kind people. They really were kind people. I really felt they'd sort of take me under their wing. They never asked any questions. They just accepted who I was. And I really wanted to continue my meditation and practice with them. And so having two options overseas come up, the decision was made when I found that they had a community in this part of the world. And that's how I ended up in Sharjah for about a year and then moved into Dubai, which is where I live now. But I came also with the thought that, well, if I don't like it, I can always go home. So I think that's a good mindset to come or move to a different part of the world to. And I also, even now, look back to that one decision when I said, you know, sink or swim. And from that one decision, so many doors have opened, so many possibilities have opened themselves up. So, you know, think back to the decisions that, you know, you make in life. They can lead you in all sorts of directions.
Well, thank you. Carol, where can we buy your book?
Oh, it's on Amazon. However, right now, if you buy it, I've organized hundreds and hundreds of extra gifts. So if you buy the book, you not only get the book, but you get loads of bonus gifts. So the site to go for that is literally the title of the book. It's www.youthedivinegenius.com. So youthedivinegenius.com. Go there. It'll link you to your nearest Amazon site, and then you'll get a sort of number, go back to the site, and you've got access to, oh, we've got some amazing gifts up there, including a gift from you, Star. Thank you for that.
Well, I'm glad. I think I'm one of the gift givers there, too.
Yes, absolutely. I think there's a one of your spiritually rich books. It's excellent.
Well, that's good. Listen up, people. Lots of free gifts from lots of different teachers, masters, and trainers all over the world. Go and buy this book today. You are a master trainer in NLP. You know, sometimes people still have a lot of unsureness. And they don't exactly know what NLP is and how it works. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and your trainings?
Well, NLP has many different definitions, and I know I get asked what it is because of the what it means, neuro-linguistic programming. You know, it's not too clear. Some people think, well, should it be on the spirituality bookshelf? Should it be a business area? Is it about communication? Is it about relationships? And actually, the question to all, the answer to all those questions is yes, because it has applications literally in all areas of your life. I've heard it called the new art and science of getting what you want. I've heard it called fitness for the mind, the study of the structure of subjective experience, which is a tough one to get your tongue around there. My definition, though, is very, very simple. I like to refer to it as the user manual for your mind. So if you think about it, we've all behaved at times in ways that are inappropriate, or maybe said the wrong thing at the wrong time, or felt that what we want is at odds with our beliefs, or felt emotions come up and thought, ooh, not the right time. So really what NLP does is it helps you become aware of those patterns in thinking, in behavior, brings to your conscious awareness what beliefs are driving those behaviors, what's important to you. But more importantly, it gives you a whole toolbox of tools and techniques to make very rapid shifts in all areas of your life. It's also about flexibility. You know, if you set a goal or get clear about your intention, if you only have one way to get to that intention, you may or may not achieve it. However, as I said, NLP encourages flexibility and gives you so many different ways to achieve the same result. And what I like and have loved about it, I've been in that field probably for about 15 plus years, is I really think it's a great foundation for everything you do in your life. It really teaches you how you work, and also different from so many other areas in the world which looks at what goes wrong. NLP studies what goes right. So if there's any area of your life where you're really brilliant, wouldn't it be useful to discover how you do what you do, not just what you do, how you do what you do, so you can recreate it in other areas of your life? And, of course, then there's areas of life where we're not so great. Wouldn't it be useful to be able to shift those? And so, really, another way of thinking about NLP is modeling excellence. If you're brilliant in an area, discover how you do it, and then, of course, teach it to other people. Or find somebody else who's brilliant in what they do. Find how they do it so you can install those same patterns of success in yourself. What a fabulous recipe.
Well, you know, so I have had NLP with several teachers around the world. I've done month-long practitioners and the month-long masters, I mean, back way back in the day. And it seems to me like you're teaching it very intensively, very deeply. And your class is how long?
Well, again, it depends on the boards of NLP have different standards. And I was blessed, Star, to study with different boards. And so the curriculum that we run is through the American Board of NLP, which I find very thorough. And so we use pre-study techniques because, you know, NLP is all about accelerated learning, as you know, and about engaging all the senses. So we have a pre-study program which comprises of an audio program, which I developed, designed, and recorded, and a manual open book test, which means that people can do all the pre-study work, can do all the theory in the comfort of their own home, which means the program really starts the moment you get the audio program and start listening to it. That means the live training, our practitioner certification program, is 7 days, and it is intense. However, it's a lot of fun. But it means that when we do the live training, it's very experiential. It gives you a lot of time, because you've already done the theory, to really practice those tools and techniques as a practitioner and as a client. I always advise people to kind of like come with their dirty laundry list, everything in their life that's not working, because you'll get the chance to tidy it all up as you go through the program and get the confidence to be a practitioner and facilitate shifts and changes in other people, as well as tidy up everything in your own life. So, and as I said, we always have a lot of fun. It's intense. However, the time just flies when you're having fun. The Master Practitioner Program, again, we have a pre-study program for that, audio and a manual, and that's 12 days. We tend not to do that consecutively. We find it challenging for people to take that amount of time off work in one fell swoop. So in between the modules, there's also, I'd like to say, some tasking, a modeling project, things like that that are actually going to help our students, you know, continue to use those tools. We've all heard the saying, if you don't use it, you lose it. And I really like to encourage people to, you know, think of it not so much as a course, but these are tools and techniques that you use for a lifetime. And we've all been on programs where it's great at the time, and then you go back to your life and you forget everything you've learned. And I would say now that NLP has become something not that I do. It's part of who I am, because it also includes a sort of set of beliefs to live by and truly live by. And I know you've studied NLP, Star, so I'm sure you found the same as well.
Now, I find that when people start out in the metaphysical field or in the metaphysical practitioner, they go, oh, my God, what am I going to have to take? And I always recommend that they take at least one weekend or more of NLP, because if you can communicate with excellence, you can touch everybody from pauper to prince. And people always look at me and go, why? I says, well, you know, diamond communications, diamond being, diamond processing. And they're like, oh, okay. And then they take it and they come back and then they start trying to sell me, you know, sell that NLP to the choir, you know. It's like, okay, baby, yeah, I know that one. And so you do still have occasionally have classes of NLP during the year, correct?
Oh, yes, we regularly run NLP certification programs. And like you, Star, I really truly believe everyone can benefit from attending an NLP program, because it's how you work as a human being. And as you said, if you're going to deepen your studies in metaphysics, it's such a strong foundation, not just in language and in the questions you use, in how you communicate. It really is such a thorough foundation. I wish they had more or realized its value in education as well and in schools. And I know occasionally I've had younger people attend our programs. Their parents have been on and said, you know, can my teenagers attend? And, you know, they've taken to it like a duck to water, and really sort of understood that it really is such a foundation for life, whether that's business, relationships, with your family, with your friends, how you get your message across. I really, as I said, like you, believe it's a foundation for everything you do. And that
I like
to
see
this
it
is a great
start
place
out.
To come from.
I'd like to see it start out in kindergarten and first grade. And yet we know that we can shine our light where light is accepted, so we just keep shining, and eventually the educational systems and around the world will change to not only teach us, but teach us what is most beneficial to us, which most education systems
right
don't.
Now. Yeah, I really, you know, we're in accelerated times, and, you know, the children today learn so quickly, and that's what I've said, when we get teenagers, they just soak it up. And also the lovely thing about NLP is it appeals to all the senses, you know, what you see, what you hear, what you feel. You know, there really is something in there for everyone. And that means also the way of teaching, or not so much teaching, I don't believe you can train or teach anybody in anything. All we can ever hope to do, Star, is create an environment where people choose to learn. However, NLP gives you a lot of tools and techniques to engage people in the learning process so they want to learn. You create those states of curiosity and, you know, using lovely metaphors that really engage people.
Well, I love it. I absolutely keep recommending it since, gee, how many years it has been around? I think since Frogs into Princes. Oh, it's been a long, long time. All right. You love to travel, and I know you travel because you've come and seen me before. And your book weaves in and out of stories about a trip that you took to Ecuador, and you spent time there with an indigenous tribe. Talk to me about that trip, and why was that so special to you?
Well, I think one of the quotes I put in the book came from some indigenous tribal elders. And they say, if you're coming to help us, you're wasting your time. If you're coming because you know your liberation is bound up with ours, then let us work together. And I heard that quote, I think it was in 2011, in February, when I was just starting a series of other programs on the west coast of the U.S. And I knew then that I would go on this trip to Ecuador. And it was organized by the Pachamama Alliance, an NGO. And I went on the super journey with some amazing people. I'm sure you've heard of Lynn Twist. Amazing woman who wrote written a wonderful book called The Soul of Money, and she was just born to be a fundraiser. I've never met such a heart-driven woman. Her husband, Bill Twist, and also John Perkins, the author of An Economic Hitman, or Confessions of an Economic Hitman. So I really was, you know, and they take trips and take small groups, small groups, right into the heart and lungs of the world, into Ecuador, to spend time with a particular tribe called the Achua tribe. Now, the Achua are one of the first indigenous tribes to ever reach out to the West, not because they need our help, but because they know that we need their help. There's a strong need, you know, for us to reconnect again with Gaia, Pachamama, Mother Earth. And so I remember arriving in Ecuador, and we were taken by bus a few days down to a place called Shell, where if the weather permits, you fly into the heart and lungs of the world, the rainforest. If the weather is bad, then you don't. It's as simple as that. There's no cars, there's no Wi-Fi, there's no driving in or out. It really is remote. And Star, I remember taking off, Lynn was actually sitting behind me, and looking down, I could see the rainforest, and literally my heart felt we were going into the heart and lungs of our earth, our world. And you can maybe hear it in my voice, I felt the emotions come up. It was very powerful. And then when we sort of landed on a very small strip, which the Achua tribe had cleared, and then taken on the boats. I mean, honestly, I thought David Attenborough was going to jump out from somewhere. It really, you know, you feel so remote. They're very quiet people. As I mentioned, they're a dream culture, which doesn't mean they spend all their day dreaming. However, they do listen carefully to their dreams, and it's said that if you go in to meet with the Achua, it's because they have dreamt you in there. So it feels already as if it's a gift when you arrive that, you know, they have dreamt you there, that you're there for a deeper purpose. And we also have, I mean, as well as learning from them that, I mean, you're walking, every plant looks the same, yet they educate you about the plants. Every single one is different, even though they look the same. Talk about all of any remedy we want in terms of healing is within nature. It truly is. We also had the opportunity to spend time with them in some of their ceremonies. They get up very early before the sun rises every morning, and they drink a sort of, it's like a tea, but they drink to the point where they purge. Now, of course, in our culture, purging is a sort of often perceived as a bad thing. They view it as getting rid of toxins, parasites, anything like that. So we joined them on this. And then afterwards, it's still dark, still early morning, they sit round the fire and they share their dreams. And what was so beautiful was sharing our dreams from the night before with them, and hearing how the elders interpreted them from their point of the world, part of the world and their point of view was so different from our world of cars and high rises. And you know, when you're in a place like that, no Wi-Fi, no connection with the outside world, and you truly immerse yourself, I probably didn't realize it at the time how profound that trip was. But as I look back now, and that was in 2012, it's 2017 now, even to this day, that journey guides me. What I saw, what I felt, so I just didn't realize how profound it was until afterwards. And I remember coming back here to Dubai, and I probably didn't speak to anybody for about 3 weeks. I just wanted to be silent. But the fact that I even met you through a sort of series of synchronicities, you know, all the things I've studied and been led to actually came from that trip. It planted some strong seeds within me that I just didn't realize how profound it was. So when I was looking at writing the book, You, the Divine Genius, I've been on many trips and journeys, and many of them profound. I love traveling. I love South America very much. And I had other trips and journeys I wanted to put into the book. However, the sections of the book lent itself to certain experiences within the rainforest and with the Achuar tribe that I decided to weave that journey through the book and keep it a theme. So I hope you enjoyed sort of the theme and the weaving of that particular journey. And as I go into book two, I'll probably share some of my other journeys as well. But it really was profound, really profound.
It's amazing how much the mind distracts you from your spiritual purpose and your mental and emotional healing. I remember when I was living with Esperanza, we went down to the river and we washed the clothes on the rocks. Now, it was no we. Since I was the apprentice, it was more like me who washed her clothes. I had been living with Esperanza for about 3 or 4 months. And, it's in a Palapa hut village in the middle of the jungles in the state of Venezuela. And I'm kneeling on the river rocks. And I am thinking, shit. I am thinking, I'm doing somebody's laundry, poor me. They're all back at the camp healing and spreading magic, poor me, poor me. And as I was washing Esperanza's dress, the sequence of colored lights burst out of her dress into the air, and I realized that all this time, she had been leaving me gifts of sacred geometry and light in her clothes. So as I washed them, if I was paying attention, I would see them. And many, many times in my study, I've lived in China, Africa, India, a couple of times Indonesia, South America, Mexico. We had none of the connections to the world. And my greatest enemy to me being with my teachers was the constant voice in my head or trying to write letters home or communicate with home instead of being fully present. And it sounds to me, it feels to me, what I hear you saying is that really fully present in this time you were in Ecuador. And that is a gift.
Totally.
I beg your pardon?
I said so totally. You know, literally when I landed, my mobile didn't work, no internet, and I just thought, right, I'll immerse myself in it. And it's those times when you're caught in the quiet, they are the biggest gifts, truly.
You know, and when does the soul get to speak? The soul doesn't speak often in your lifetime because the mental body, emotional body, the personality, the ego, the mind usually are fighting for attention and are blah, 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 blah. You know, the ego is like one long TV show that's all commercials. You know, it's amazing you were your own healer, but you're also your own distraction. And when you become your own genius, you will learn how to turn off all those distractions there. So where can I buy your book?
It's at www.youthedivinegenius.com. That will lead you to Amazon, and it's a Kindle version is available as well if you prefer that. But if you go through this link, youthedivinegenius.com, you'll also get access to hundreds and hundreds of gifts. I have purposely kept that link open for a little bit longer so that your listeners can take advantage of all the other gifts. What I've also done with the gifts is, you know, there's such a variety of gifts there. It's not, you know, one thing, the next thing, it's the same. It's hundreds and hundreds of different gifts which can help you in relationships, in your spiritual development, in business, in sales, in... There's so many people who've been so generous to share. So, you know, I want you to take advantage, or your listeners to take advantage of all those wonderful variety of gifts. They're wonderful, including a book from yourself.
All right. You know, as we move forward in time and deeper into the 21st century, there are new challenges ahead. And how do you help business leaders keep their business upright, and what creates a shift for leaders and individuals in their life right now? Talk to me.
Okay, well, you know, the book is based around a lot of questions that I have had, and I'm sure many people have. You know, things like, you know, why do I experience the world the way I do? Why do other people experience the world so differently? That age-old question, what really is reality? And more importantly, how do I impact it? How do I create it? And as individuals, we have those questions. And in business, a lot of those questions are going on too, because in business, the pace of change, you know, as we move deeper into the 21st century, there's new challenges. You know, how on earth a business is going to keep upright? And I always think of, what's that movie, Inception, where they have a spinning top and they say it's the speed of the spin that keeps you upright. And you've certainly got to be quick these days. So in terms of, since I also work in the corporate field, I wanted to take some of the messages that are in the book, however, make them more appropriate in terms of working with business leaders. So I've created something called the spiral effect. And, of course, in life we can spiral downwards or we can spiral upwards. So it's a spiral effect, but also unlocking the divine genius in your organization. And it really starts with the business leader being the catalyst by discovering what lies beneath the hard drive. In other words, what patterns we've got going on. I mean, you were just talking about, you know, we have this constant chatter, we've got the mind, our emotions, you know, it's like constant commercials going on. So literally understanding that 95% of the time we are operating from programs that are already installed at the unconscious level. So, you know, even when we think we're consciously making a decision, we're not. We're operating from patterns that we've already been running in our life, and we've got to start recognizing those patterns to literally, like you upgrade your computer or load new software or buy a new car. You know, when was the last time you looked at sort of the programs in your mind that you're running? Are they supporting you or sabotaging you? So first key is discovering what lies beneath the hard drive, basically, and then identifying the triggers for your brand, your organization. So if you go back to, you know, conditioned response, as a leader, what happens when people or your employees hear your name? Or what happens when you call a meeting? Do they go, oh, fantastic, another meeting, opportunity to share creative ideas, or more likely, oh, no, another meeting? And when they hear your name, are they going, oh, or oh? You know, what response do you trigger in others? What does your organization or your brand trigger in your customers? Now, here's the twist. In that once you've started to identify that, we know that crisis or chaos creates evolution. when I shared my story of how I came to be here in the Middle East, I said it was really a crisis or chaos in my life, you know, that relationship going in the wrong direction. But actually, although it felt bad at the time, created the biggest evolution in me. And so the same in organizations. It's often crisis that creates evolution. And it could be a financial crash, a merger, change in leadership. However, what I would suggest now is that leaders need to be not waiting for chaos, provoke chaos. Because within chaos, there's a lot of energy. And you can learn to harness that chaotic energy to trigger the shift, the evolution. And as a leader, when you change, other people follow. It's as simple as, you know, if you smile at somebody, the natural reaction is to smile back. So literally, when you change, you have the opportunity to ignite that morphogenic field in others. And that's what creates the waves. And I think we're seeing this a lot more in the world at large and in businesses where there is chaos, but it's the brave leader who's ready to start that perfect storm, you know, provoke that chaos and really lead the transformation. And I feel that's what's needed now. So that's how I work with individuals and leaders and organizations to take them a little bit deeper to start identifying what's really or who's really running their organization. Those patterns that are a little bit dated, and how do we upgrade the system?
You know, it's really interesting because the company is always like the owner in some way or another. And I've been doing corporate training since, what, 70-something. And the energies of the owner or the president they become bigger and bigger, lower and lower you get in the company. If the president and the owner doesn't care, then the employees don't care, you know?
So it's got to start at the top, and unfortunately, a lot of learning and development goes in at the middle level. The leader says, oh, it's not working, let's train the team, and it's not going to work. It needs to start at the top. And as I said, I've used the theme, the cover of my book is a spiral, and I've used the theme of the spiral throughout the book because, you know, the spiral emulates the microcosm and the macrocosm, and I've called the sort of the way I work with organizations now, the spiral effect, because, you know, if you're spiraling in the right direction, you're really, you know, leading towards infinite expansion, which is what life is all about. We think it's a journey. We're getting to a destination. I like to think of it as a dance, you know, and we're always evolving. We're always evolving, and now's the time to start to go beyond the boundary of who you believe yourself to be. A phrase I often use is, you're always more than you think you are. In other words, you're only limited by your thoughts.
Absolutely. And Esperanza used to say, enlightenment comes when you're uncomfortable. And what she meant was that you've never been in that situation before. You spread your boundaries so wide, you've put yourself in places where you're not comfortable. And I think that's a very important message to give to people is if you're going to run a business, you're going to run a company, your energy has to expand. And it's always, for me, when I start doing some corporate stuff, it's always one of the very first things I aim at having my the whole owner of the company do, is I aim for them to go do a fire walk.
Yeah.
And you know, that is the first thing that shows their mind that there's mind over matter. And I hear that you're a master of firewalks. Is that true?
Yes, I love running these events, Star, because I see such rapid shifts. And, you know, I said earlier that, you know, 95%, you know, we're operating from programs stored at the unconscious level. I think they estimate that 95% of who we are in terms of how we respond, our emotions, our reactions in any situation, 95% of who we are is already set by the age of 35. Shocking, really. But what that means is that, you know, how do you ever learn anything new when, you know, you go to a training and it's like, oh, I know what they're going to say. I know what they're going to do. You always respond and react in the same way. So what happens with the firewalk, and this is one of the reasons I love it, and people always say to me, well, you know, Carol, do we need more firewalkers in the world? And the answer to that is, well, probably not. But what the world does need, and what most organizations need, is people who can face their fears with courage. And I see the fire inspire that sort of courage in people. Because when people come to a firewalk, they've got, I mean, it puts them, I guess, into crisis and chaos, which I was just speaking about, because they've got no neural connections, no neurons wiring and firing of how do I deal in a situation like that. They've got nothing to feed back from the past that's similar to a firewalk. It literally puts them way out of their comfort zone. And so what happens is we have people, by law, they have to sign a waiver. And quite frankly, the waiver is very much in your face. Of it tells you exactly what you're going to do. And people say, well, I'm not signing that. And I've never forced anyone to walk the coals if they didn't want to. But I always say, well, sign it, and then you can change your mind if you want to. But, you know, within sort of, as I sort of rev them up, as we talk, we often use a drumming circle as well, which is great and a lot of fun, or maybe I'll do another breakthrough experience like the arrows or boards. And what happens is people start to open up at that time about the possibility. However, I never fool them. I always say it's going to be about 1,700 degrees Fahrenheit, those coals. And then they start walking those coals, and something shifts. There's a change in their psyche. You know, it begs the question, if I can do that, what else can I do in my life? What else have we been taught that's impossible, that may not be impossible? You know, and if you've got a sales team who's been given huge targets and they're saying, oh, I don't think I can hit my target, they walk across those coals, there's going to be a huge shift of what else is possible. And I think it highlights the power of focus, particularly focus. I know some African tribes say that if your energy matches the energy of the fire, you will walk completely unharmed. And it really is a fun experience. And I think
I love
fun
it.
Because people think it's going to be fearful, but it's joyful, it's fun, but it's so powerful. I still run them because I haven't found anything else that creates new neurons wiring and firing in a new way as quickly as that. And I'm sure you'll agree with me, as I know
there are a couple of other things that I teach, but we're not here to discuss them today, that have the same sort of energy. I remember once I had these two big shot lawyers from Washington, D.C. They came down to Texas, and they firewalked with us. And they were sitting there putting their shoes and socks on, and they go, hey, Star, remind me the trick we used to walk on fire. And I was, there is no track, you know. But that's how the mind works. Now, I want to talk about something for a minute. Are you familiar with chaos magic?
With what magic?
Chaos. Remember you talked about that we need to be creating more chaos? Okay, so I just want you to make a note that I do teach chaos magic, and I teach it every couple of years, and it is an actual magic that was developed before I was born, and it has its own rituals and its own stuff, and it's really, really what happens is when you create all this chaos, the only place it can go is into order, and it's usually a new order. So that's really, really something that I can lend you $20 on and maybe even run you through the course. And think about that, people. Stuff gets so crazy, and you say it can't get any crazier. And what happens, either gets one more crazy or everything starts falling back into a different new order. So pay attention to that. Carol, I am
What happens when we're sick or when chaos strikes or an emotional fall or a financial fall is everybody wants everything to go back the way it was, and it
cannot.
That's
not how it works.
Exactly.
It comes together differently, more productively, more energy efficient, deeper soul-wise for you. When something falls apart, it's to make the materials to build something new, not to rebuild it.
So it's a time of celebration more than anything else. You know, when chaos strikes, instead of saying, oh, my goodness, it's a time to say, yay, I'm about to evolve another couple of levels. Bring it on.
Bring on the chaos. All right. I am having April 20th to 30th a wonderful class I've been working on for over 3 years. It's called Divine Templates, and Carol will be there at that class with me. And Divine Templates is about the 22 master templates, how you hold your template, how you hold your lessons, your learning, how you hold your patterns and stuff on your template. It is a 10-day healing class. As of right now, the handout is 1,680 pages. The handout is so big that we will be giving it to you on discs instead of printing it, since it is 19 inches high. So here is
I've seen it, so I can vouch for that. You showed me on Skype the other day. I know how big it is. You'd have to be giving people a free suitcase if you weren't putting it on
No,
disc.
No, no. You're going to get it on disc. I'm not printing anybody any paper. Nobody's going to have three-inch binders of paper. I'm going to give it to you on disc, available for your computer. And, of course, for all my people who read ahead, we're only going to get, there's four discs, but you're going to get one. We're going to study that, and then we're going to go to the next. We have people coming from Indonesia. We have people coming from Germany. We have people coming from Dubai. We have people coming from all over the United States. So please look on my calendar and find out about my Divine Templates. Do you have a calendar on your website, sweetie?
I do. So I have a couple of, I've got two websites. So on Matrix, like the movie The Matrix. So
oh,
it's matrix-training.com. My full schedule is there for our NLP certification programs. And, you know, we use a fabulous resort hotel here. There's a sea view. The food is absolutely wonderful. It's a really wonderful environment. So I know for some of your listeners in that part of the world, think of it as a great place to come for a holiday and see a completely different part of the world. The shopping is fantastic. We have the biggest shopping mall in the world. We have the tallest building in the world. We have the richest horse race in the world. And I would love to show you some of the other parts of Dubai.
I think I remember
like
something about the market or the souk or something, just having incredible stuff. What do you call it there?
Yeah, no, we do have the souks. We have the spice souk, the gold souk. I know, Star, you've had clients definitely from this part of the world. Have you also been over to this part of the world, to the desert?
I have been. I have been all through the upper part, from Morocco all the way around to Turkey, all the way around and up at some ungodly time in my life. Was that 1978? Oh, I don't remember. Ooh. It was a few years ago. But, yes, I had loved this. I think everybody remembers the spice souk there and the little restaurants, the little restaurants inside where you could eat.
Yeah, you buy the beautiful frankincense and myrrh to burn and all your spices. And the gold
and there is a tremendous amount of intelligence and wisdom in that particular area. So if you go do an NLP class, you're going to go step into a great, great grid. All right. Kara, for the last time, tell me your two websites and the name of your book.
Okay, so my websites for the NLP is matrix-training.com. My own website for my speaking and keynotes is literally my name, caroltalbot.me. And if you want to buy the book, and I seriously recommend you do, it's really to take you beyond the boundaries of who you believe you are, truly. So it's youthedivinegenius.com, and you can also access all those hundreds of wonderful, wonderful gifts, including a wonderful book, Spiritually Rich by Star.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining me today. Remember, I am at www.starfuentes.com. That's two R's. Thank you.
Thank you.